Welcome to Leaders and Legends of Online Learning, a podcast dedicated to the experts. Thank you for listening. Each episode, we'll be learning from the world's leading thinkers and practitioners in online learning and linking to ideas relevant to online teaching, working with online learners, and digital education. You can listen to the experts and check their profiles and link to some of their work on our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com. I'm Mark Nichols, the interviewer in this episode. You'll meet Shannon Holm in this episode. Shannon is CTO with Open Polytechnic and General Manager of iQualify, a learning management system developed in New Zealand. Shannon describes the development and evolution of an online platform. Listen out for some valuable tips on how to consider online learning from a student experience perspective. Right, I'm talking with Shannon Holm, who is the Chief Technology Officer of Open Polytechnic, but also General Manager of iQualify, which is a learning management system built from a UX perspective. Shannon, it's unusual to have a non-academic talk on the podcast, but it's really good talking with you. You are indeed a leader of online learning.
Thanks, Mark. I'm really happy to be here.
Brilliant. Can we start with a brief overview of your career to date?
So I'm going to start early. I'm a technologist at heart, and I started down the software development path pretty early on. So after taking a lead from my mother, who was a programmer, I started copying games out of code books for my Commodore 64.
This was in the 80s.
This was in the 80s.
Great.
Yeah, so from the age of seven, so I definitely got started early. And by the time I was in sixth form, I wrote the study tools for my German exams in BASIC. So that was my first taste of education technology, I guess.
Yeah, great. And learning technology as well.
And learning technology, yeah.
Brilliant. So where did your career take you from there?
So I hit the internet pretty early in my career. And I got into software development work while the web was still pretty young, so pretty much in its infancy. My career took me through some local web startups and to the Ericsson Melbourne IT collaboration at Melbourne University in the early 2000s.
Mm. What was your role there?
I was in a usability and user experience team, so really looking at how you can measure the success of a mobile application with real people, which is a really interesting insight and provided a lot of value for later, I think. So from there, I moved to work with some learning technology teams, both at Swinburne University and Monash University in Melbourne, and then returned to Wellington in New Zealand. From there, I moved into working with learning technology teams at Swinburne University and Monash University in Melbourne, and then returned to Wellington in New Zealand to kick off time in project management initially at Victoria University of Wellington. And then this led to working in agile projects and building kind of large web platforms, really. So it's all kind of leading to a place.
Yeah. So this learning technology, though, what was it? Was it a particular learning management system? Or?
Yeah, so it varied. Swinburne University was involved in, a good amount of distance delivery. It still is. And at the time, we were looking at everything as a team from how lectures were videoed and shared, through to educational metadata and repositories for reusable learning objects, and development of things like language learning tools in Flash. So quite varied, very much the technologies of the day. I mean, this is the early 2000s. Yeah. But a team that was a mixture of technologists and people with an academic background. So bringing those people together to solve kind of a big range, really, of learning-focused software problems.
Right, so there's a really broad range of solutions there. So you don't have an educational background per se, but I'd imagine that put you pretty much at the forefront of how technology might be used in education.
Yeah, I mean, I think sort of having that exposure to educational settings at that range of universities kind of really helped. So Swinburne University, very much a learning and teaching support team who are working across everything from kind of language interactives, educational repositories, right through to bringing in the learning management system that the organisation used, which was Blackboard. So on return to Wellington, I spent time at Victoria University of Wellington, but very much in a project management role, so moving kind of away from software at this point and thinking more about delivery across the IT part of that organisation. And from there, getting really into sort of agile projects and, building out large web platforms using agile and lean processes at places like 3 Months and Telecom. But the focus was really on working out how to make teams work well together to achieve, you know, these kind of outcomes. 3 months was also really heavily involved in developing using open source platforms. This is when I sort of started to talk to people a lot about, you know, different ways of using technology to achieve these kind of outcomes, presenting, running agile workshops and talking about using the web standards for mobile development instead of, you know, the kind of closed ecosystem development that was kind of really popular at the time for development.
So some of this work was outside of the university or educational context?
Yeah, absolutely. So there was a period of time there where it was very much in sort of startup, telco and insurance land, you know, looking at kind of more general agile delivery and software development. But after a stint at a large insurer, I had that chance to return to an education setting again, but this time with a role at Open Polytechnic. So after working to introduce Agile into the organization's IT delivery, I became more and more involved in looking at how learners interacted with the Polytechnic online, so using that web space for their learning, and I leapt at the opportunity to focus on this.
Right, so at the time, Open Polytechnic was using Moodle. I think it'd be fair to say institutionally we were struggling a little bit because we were a distance provider. We didn't necessarily want courses being edited all the time. We needed a sense of stability. We also needed a sense of consistency as a student went from one course to the other. We didn't want them to learn again how to engage with Moodle because if a Moodle course is customised, it can be quite confusing for a learner. So you picked up on these sorts of themes. Can you talk a bit about where your thinking went and how we actually got to qualify from that starting point?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there was a really interesting kind of mix of things happening there where Open Polytechnic had some really kind of well-established processes around getting content together and out, and that led to, you know, a high level of consistency in the print world. But when those practices met Moodle, where there was a large level of kind of autonomy around course authoring, the outcome was really that the courses started to look and feel very, very different to learners. And that's a natural consequence of people having access to authoring. That's what happens. I think you only have to look at something like GeoCities to see sort of what happens over time, where you get more and more shiny things, more and more different approaches and more and more personality coming out into those courses. But ultimately, the person who has to deal with that difference is the learner, who has other kind of goals in mind when they come into study. So there was an opportunity to look at their interactions and find out how we could simplify their experience. So, you know, thinking about that idea of, you know, an opinionated approach to the learning design so that every learner got a consistent experience from course to course. By focusing on the platform rather than the course.
Okay, and that's really the secret source of iQualify's genesis, isn't it? The fact that it has that opinionated pedagogy, I know you've used the term before, built into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a mixture of that opinionated pedagogy built in, combined with a high level of self-doubt, where we are really open to challenging our assumptions about how learning works by putting in place measurement around that learning experience and around the decisions that we make. So starting with an opinion, but being very willing to be proven wrong through the learning interactions that happen, and then responding to those to improve again on the experience. And that iteration is really what I qualify as.
So early on too, I think you decided on taking a Netflix-style approach where we'd run little experiments, if you like, on learners and how they engage with the platform. And that would in turn enhance it by providing evidence-based change. So are there some examples you could possibly share about how that's worked?
Yeah, so a really nice simple example there is thinking about something like the social notes that are in iQualify, where a learner can choose where they talk about their experiences alongside the content, and they add those to the course, and other learners can read and interact with those. And we'd seen a reasonable amount of uptake on those, so the idea of them was okay, but the ongoing engagement in those notes wasn't really there. So we looked at basically sort of an experiment, and again, an experiment that was beneficial to the learners rather than one that may sort of harm their learning experience, I guess that's the key thing there, that would allow them to be notified every time someone responded to one of their comments. So a small change, it's a simple example, but it really increased the amount of engagement in that self-directed kind of observation of how the learning applied, you know, to that learner and to their experiences.
Great. So Equalify started off as your vision. And can you tell us a bit more about how that's now led to where you are today?
So Equalify started off that way, but I think it's very much been informed through the people that use Equalify and through the people, the organisations that are putting their learners onto the platform. And that's allowed us to grow a team around the platform where, you know, one of our first hires into the team was a user experience specialist. That allowed us to start really focusing on that kind of design aspect of the platform. And from there, we've sort of grown to include, you know, design and development, learning design and analytics, and other kind of similar roles. And that's really meant that from sort of a leadership point of view, we've needed to look kind of at what is happening next. So where Equalify is going and how it kind of continues to meet those next challenges of learning. So for example, in the last couple of years, we've looked at micro-credentialing, we've brought in Open Badges too, and then started looking at how those frameworks allow learners to kind of control recommendations that they can receive from employers about the work they've done to achieve a badge in the learning environment. So very much kind of looking at how some of those kind of workplace relationships sit alongside learning. And then also through other things that have happened with the platform, for example, the growth of schools using the platform has allowed us to really kind of look at the kind of tools that a school might need to provide the kind of experience that they'd like to provide, but often need larger, more expensive tools. Yeah. And we can often solve some of those problems for them through a platform that everyone is using. So allowing us to really sort of, you know, solve many problems at once and not requiring every organisation to kind of stand up these very, very expensive IT systems needed to, you know, monitor student progress and provide that kind of communication, provide the frameworks for social learning that happens in Equalify. So those are the kind of things that actually become really exciting and allow us to kind of challenge our ideas around what the platform is there for and who it's there for.
Right. Now, I need to help perhaps contextualise what Equalify really is. So it's a learning management system, but perhaps a very, very unique one. But before sort of going there, I remember when you first talked to me about Equalify, and I was thinking, as I think many people would, why on earth do we need another learning management system? We've got Canvas, we've got Blackboard, we've got Moodle, we've got a whole lot of other platforms which can be configured quite well to student learning. There are those who would say FutureLearn is a wonderful platform as well, and also OpenEdX. I mean, there's no end in sight of these platforms coming along. And yet suddenly we've got a new one now, and it's also being adopted quite quickly, I think, across New Zealand, and I think you've got users in Australia as well now. What's the secret? What is different about Equalify, and what does it do that's actually so attractive?
Yeah, it's a good question. And initially, I think, you know, we were very reluctant to call it a learning management system, and that probably sort of talks to some of its differences. So we're really focused on this idea of social learning, so the social learning experience, and that ability to have facilitator-led learning as well happening through the platform. So those are some of the sort of initial ideas. But I think over time it's become increasingly differentiated in terms of that idea of a platform that any organisation can use to stand up a course that already feels familiar to a learner, that bundles in some of the tools that learners can use to communicate with each other and to ask questions around the content, and also in being kind of very focused. So many of the learning management systems that we've seen out there try to do everything. They try to be everything to the people that use them. And we've really focused Equalify on that digital learning experience, the course experience, and relied on the many systems that sit in organisations like customer relationship management systems and results systems and other things, marking systems, to sit around what Equalify does. So by focusing on that learning experience, we've been able to solve that really well. And in a way, kind of for ourselves at least, redefine the job of the learning platform as something that leads a learner through their study, through a course, as a group, and then allows them to kind of engage in activities and challenge themselves on their own understanding. So I'm told something, I'm challenged with something, and then I reflect. And those kind of cycles of learning really help create a different experience and I qualify to what we see in the other tools that are out there.
Yeah. So I suppose the learning management system first started, late 20th century, late 90s, I think, were the first few that came through. But they really did try to be an online campus, didn't they? They tried to take all the back office systems and become a one-stop shop for all student data. Mm-hmm. But in iQualify, you've actually started from the other end. I mean, in previous LMSs, it's like the student experience was the afterthought. It's what happened at the end of it to make all the data possible to feed the big system behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But iQualify, you did start with user experience, and it is a course-centric environment. Other LMSs, too, do tend to be quite teacher-centric, but here you're deliberately designing one which is more user-centric. Are there any other differences?
I mean, I think that learner-centric aspect is a really interesting one, in that initially we were so focused on the learner's experience that we sort of even made authoring quite difficult and set it to the side. and you know, we knew that we could work with authors to kind of get that across. Yeah. Now those tools are outstanding. But our real focus was on a learner having kind of a delightful experience that made them want to come back. We knew that if learners came back to the environment, they'd have more chance of sticking it through. And if they stuck it through, they'd succeed. So that was kind of our goal in that. We've used open web standards really heavily. We've leaned on those standards. So the offline aspects of iQualify are met through a technology called Progressive Web Apps, which means that we can deliver iQualify to any device without relying on apps being installed or particular kind of types of browsers. We have taken advantage of kind of mobile-first design patterns. So we look at how the experience works on a small handheld device and then scale up, rather than starting on a large screen and trying to see whether we can scale it down, which often doesn't work. And then again, through that constant sort of measurement and improvement, we've been able to look at how new tools work as we introduce them to make them kind of work well.
Great. I need to emphasize too that this this podcast isn't an advertisement for iQualify. but I mean, I've used the system. My team uses the system at the moment at Open Polytechnic. I've seen the student results come in and the evaluation feedback. So it's clear that there's something quite different here, which is working really well.
Yeah, and I think the key thing is that that process of iQualify, which is about, again, kind of learning how to be a better platform. And so I think we can never sort of rest on the idea that it's great, that it just has to be better. And I think that's a key kind of outcome, I think, in user-facing software, is that it really needs that mechanism for improvement built in. And I think that's sort of primarily what iQualify has sort of brought to the learning management space.
So, Shannon, some learning management systems are built for teachers, where they're designed to make it easier for a teacher to put his or her content into an online form and enable students to encounter them. The student almost becomes a sort of afterthought, and course designers might work with a teacher but don't necessarily have to. iQualify, though, seems to have quite a different approach to it. Can you tell us a bit about how those three relationships, designer, teacher, student, might be reflected in the iQualify platform?
Yeah, it's a good question. We still have an authoring kind of concept in iQualify, but it's constrained by the sort of design guidelines that are in the platform. And the reason why we've done that is we've really focused on the learner seeing something that they expect in terms of the structure and the layout. And so leaving the kind of course authoring experience to innovate on content and approach and activities and pacing, those kind of things. From that sense, then there's sort of almost a stronger relationship between the course designer and the learner. But mediated by the facilitator, who kind of takes the developed course and leads a group of learners through it, and is really there to kind of guide and coach and kind of answer questions. So we've taken on very much that kind of approach, and we've had a good response from that. You know, everything from teachers in sort of a secondary schooling kind of system, through to employers and in universities and other places.
So, and I qualify then by the sound of it, it's more built for the end user, the student. So the student experience is king. Everything else sort of heads toward that. There are some, though, who might argue from a design perspective that you can't be as creative. What would your response to that be?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting challenge for people to kind of express themselves at work and try and figure out what creativity means for them. And I think there are times and places for creativity in terms of, you know, kind of visual creativity or layout or other things. But when you're designing something that a learner needs to interact with, they really need to have an experience where there's no surprises. And so those constraints are really there to help a learner. And in the end, we've had to say, well, a learner's ability to understand what's in front of them beats the need for, you know, have some flashing text or underlines. And I know it's not quite as simple as that. People use their creativity often to enhance the message or to emphasize certain points. But we think we've sort of reached a good compromise where the range of tools is there. But ultimately, it needs to come across well to the learner who doesn't want to have to learn, you know, how to use the LMS as part of their education experience.
Yeah, yeah. You used a term earlier on, we were having a conversation, you talked about task switching. So that there may well be some other tools that are perhaps more powerful and have additional features, but if it's not the one a student uses on a daily basis, there's quite an overhead of learning how to use that tool properly. Can you maybe talk a bit about that concept?
Yeah, so through focusing on that experience, we can kind of think about what kind of interaction someone has to do when they're going through their learning experience. And so if they're interacting with a tool to try and achieve a goal, which is to, you know, complete activities or complete an assessment or understand a concept, that needs to be sort of as simple as possible. And the moment we send them away from there to use a new tool that they're not familiar with, and they're having to kind of either remember or learn how to use that tool, we've kind of lost a certain amount of focus from them. So we've disturbed their flow, their focus on their learning, and we've made them think about something other than that complex concept they're trying to take on board, and instead think about this new UI they're looking at. So, you know, hey, here's a new kind of button. It's not like the other button. Everything is different. So you're really kind of prioritizing learning the new tool for them rather than understanding the concept you're trying to get across. So we do that really to kind of protect the learner from having to, you know, spread their attention too thin over too many things.
I'm really interested in your perspective on the few things that you would say to people who are perhaps just getting started with online learning. What sort of things should they be looking out for? But also, what are maybe some of the common mistakes you see in an online learning context?
I think that there are really convenient patterns that people can pick up on to make things easier. They kind of align with even how a presentation works, you know, kind of keep it short and focused. That idea of not diving into the detail too quickly. So, you know, telling someone what you're going to tell them, telling them, and then telling them what you've told them. And that works really well in a learning design context as well, from my point of view. The other thing is trying to kind of minimize the amount of flashy things that you throw at the learner. So again, like the tools, you know, embedding neat interactives and other things seems like a good idea because, hey, it's a simulation or it's something else, and you think it'll entertain the learner. Extra articles that you think are interesting because as a professional, they interest you. So it's tempting to give all those articles to the learner as well as you go. And I think it's really that opportunity to kind of think again about that sort of idea of focus or flow for the learner, how you minimize what you need to share with them to help them achieve their outcome, knowing that that will actually help them manage their own interests later and find these things for themselves.
Yeah, I know from seeing some I qualify courses, including some recent ones we've been developing at Open Polytechnic, there's almost an elegant simplicity about them. And to some extent, that's shaped by the platform itself, as well as the design approaches that we would tend to use. So there's quite a nice synergy taking place there.
And I think that sort of speaks to, no matter what tool people are using, understanding the tools that you are using and working within them really provides good benefits. So, you know, trying to sort of push tools in directions that they're not made to go in is always going to feel a bit abrasive. Mm. So I think for someone starting out, understanding as much about the tools that they're using first up and working within those will tend to, you know, produce a better outcome.
Excellent. Can you tell us a bit about the ideas and themes that your work has provided that are really pertinent today?
Yeah, I think the sort of ideas around agile and lean delivery have really stayed with me as robust methods to solve problems. And I think it's good to bring robust methods to the kind of environment that we're in. And in this way, it's sort of about identifying a problem or need, having an idea of how it's going to be solved, working out how to measure whether it was effective, and then building that, but then iterating on that continually. So it's never a one-off, it's always a journey. And I think it's the journey that delivers the outcome rather than that one-off assumption or fix. So I quickly started applying that approach early in the development of the learning platform we've been talking about, and inspired in part by the Eric Ries approach, Lean Startup. But in this case, applying it in an entrepreneurial way to a large education provider.
Yeah.
So taking a different approach. And so through that kind of approach, what we've done with iQualify kind of continues to challenge itself, challenge its own assumptions, which I think is the interesting thing that comes out of this. So what does a good learning experience look like? And then taking that answer and building it and challenging it and then making it better. Always being kind of willing to measure the outcome, I think, is really important as well. So the idea being good or the idea sounding good is not the same thing as the idea resulting in a better outcome for someone who's trying to achieve, you know, a better life or a new qualification or some experience that helps them deal with new problems at work, you know, the kind of things that learning is there to help with.
Yeah. So it sounds like the agile approach has been a real benefit to iQualify and its development. So there's never been a release 1.0 per se, has there?
No, there hasn't. It started off as being something, you know, very minimal, a way to test ideas, and then kind of grew. You know, we do this sort of 10 to 20 to 30 times a month in terms of changes going out, and they're all done in a way that's kind of respectful of the learner, that doesn't kind of interfere with their experience, but tries to enhance it and tries to improve it. So that's kind of a process that we've used all the way through.
Well, Shannon, it's now coming towards the end of 2019. What are your observations about online learning at the moment? What can you tell us about your impressions?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've sort of left behind that idea that MOOCs will solve all the world's problems, which was certainly something that was kind of in the air when we started iQualify. You know, there's a real sort of fervor about massive open online courses being kind of the free way to kind of take away the pain of scaling education, higher education. And I think the next one on that list is the idea that learning content and activities need to be free and completely open to be sustainable and to add value. And I think that, you know, the sort of the process of learning design needs a good model behind it to sustain that kind of continued activity and to really deliver that relevance to learners. So the newness of the learning design to respond to the changing world around us, and also to continue to attract talented and passionate people to the field that we work in. So without those kind of sustainable models backing it up, we're going to really struggle to have, you know, that continued influx of people that are excited about creating good kind of digital, you know, learning experiences.
Mm, yeah. So MOOCs and other forms of free online education aren't necessarily platform-oriented or technology-oriented. What are some of the technology trends that you can see today as far as online learning is concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few, and they gather a lot of excitement and don't always gather a lot of thought, I think. So, you know, the list is the ones that that everyone's hearing at the moment. So machine learning, you know, blockchain goes sort of hot and cold. Whether you're looking at kind of a platform or an app or single purpose or something that's kind of, you know, more multifaceted. And I think those things need to be tested. They need to be challenged. They all will play a sort of a positive role, but I think only if we're skeptical enough to, you know, find out what they're good at and what they're bad at.
Mm, yeah, fair enough. Well, Shannon, the research you'd most like to see, I know you've been on board with some of the e-learning literature that's come through over the last wee while. What are some of the gaps that you think that we need to fill?
Yeah, I think again, thinking about machine learning. So I think these technologies, they do provide a chance to do more good for more people, and that's exciting. But I think we yet to see whether those relationships will impact the learners who interact with them in a positive way. So will there be any sort of lasting negative impacts from that? So before we see that kind of widespread rollout of machine learning in education, I think we need to understand a little bit more about the human impact of that kind of artificial interaction. And, you know, I think we need to kind of acknowledge that the human aspect to learning is pretty valuable, even when it's through a digital medium. I'd really like to see a little bit more research around machine learning interactions before we kind of grasp that with open arms.
There is some work too going around internationally. Like one of the previous podcast guests has done some research on artificial intelligence actually assisting teachers, so it actually enriches that real life human interaction.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of a really positive way to look at the technology, where the artificial intelligence or machine learning becomes more like the forklift than the robot. So it assists the lifting. It doesn't necessarily kind of replace it. And I think that kind of gives us a lot more benefit.
Well, Shannon, two people you'd recommend as leaders or legends of online learning. One whose work has inspired you, someone else who you think might be a bit of an up-and-comer.
Yeah, so I mentioned I'm really a technologist at heart. And so I tend to dip into those fields for my influences.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend Douglas Hubbard, who wrote How to Measure Anything. And I think deepening that understanding of how to gather evidence and measure outcomes is really needed. It's a really positive influence. And if we're going to get behind and solve some of those larger challenges facing learning in the next decade, I think a better understanding of how to measure and deliver against those kind of measurements is needed.
Mm-hmm.
And I've already mentioned Eric Ries. But applying that idea of build, measure and learn to any change, particularly in an education setting where established learning theories can sometimes override, you know, new evidence, can help us, you know, really kind of see the value of agility, the ability to respond to evidence in a positive way and, build something that is kind of valid and proven quickly.
Shannon, thanks. You brought a real sense of the entrepreneurial and also to the student experience online. It's been great talking with you. Thank you for being a leader and legend of online learning.
Thanks, Mark. I've enjoyed the conversation.
You can learn more about Shannon and his work and find a link to iQualify from our website.
That concludes this episode. Be sure to go to our website, www.onlinelearninglegends.com, to follow up on this episode's guest. You'll also find links to others whose ideas continue to inspire and teach online learning professionals, and you can subscribe to future interviews. If you know of a leader or legend we've not yet talked to, please do drop us a line at onlinelearninglegends@gmail.com.